Welcome to the Estate Professionals Mastermind Podcast, a podcast and community by estate professionals for estate professionals, where we share the ideas and the access to people that help you work less, earn more, and do good in your community. If you get value in this free content, be sure to check out our membership where you can get live classes, access to weekly coaching, free courses, discounted courses, and 300 free probate leads. To learn more about the membership, you can visit EstateProfessionalsMastermind.com. Let's jump into this week's episode. Welcome, everybody, to the Estate Professionals Mastermind Podcast. I don't know if I could be more excited about today's guest. Mike Kading and I met just a couple of weeks ago, actually, and it was one of those people where I'm like, how have we gotten this far along on our separate paths and not cross paths? As you guys have heard me preach for years, like work less, earn more, do good. A lot of that is as a professional with your active income, getting to a level where you have a balance sheet with over $1 million. So you can reach accredited investor status and start to make double digit returns with someone, you know, off of somebody else's skill set and being a passive investor. That's one reason, I wanted to invite Mike today. The other reason is what we talk about almost daily, which is benevolence and empathy and actually bringing creative solutions to social problems that exist in our society. And I don't know that I've met a better example in the real estate space. This episode might not be about estate professions, but it's about you guys as benevolent, empathetic solutions providers, showing you someone else who's doing this in a different vertical at massive scale and just getting started. Like, I think this is early in your story, but also an opportunity for you to be part of that, to be part of the solution as a passive investor. So Mike, I can't wait to jump into this conversation. Welcome to the podcast.
Oh, thanks for having me. I'm very excited as well.
Yeah. Well, let's start with the origins. Like, let's talk about the genesis. I mean, one of the things I'm always cautious of, like as entrepreneurs, especially as driven people, like we kind of take for granted all the steps it took to get us here. And sometimes we just jump right into our story and intimidate other people. It's like, oh, they see it as, oh, I could never do that. So I like to start at the genesis of the story. Mm-hmm. So usually that is, you know, an exit from a W-2 or some sort of J-O-B into something with more purpose and seeing that you could, you know I can do better for myself. So mm-hmm. Let's talk about your beginnings and how you got where you are today.
Yeah. So obviously involved in real estate. We'll get to that in a bit, but my history is that my parents originally started this little real estate business. It wasn't much at the time. And I grew up with this, right? So I remember out shoveling dirt, picking up nails, all of that. So my whole growing up was like that. But then I went off to college and I wanted nothing to do with this business. And the reason that was is I didn't want people to think it was given to me. And so I really wrestled with my own ego on that point. But I knew deep down, I always wanted to make some kind of meaningful, positive impact on the world. And so I looked, I mean, we were pretty small at this point, but I still looked and said, why not take advantage of what we had there at that point and grow it into something that can actually have a meaningful, positive impact on the world. And so I got past my own ego, jumped in, and my dad and I worked together for a couple of years. And then he passed away. And that was a really tough moment. One day he was here, one day he wasn't. And overnight, I basically lost him. And I was now running this business. But if I'm very honest, I didn't really know what I was doing. And looking back, that was sort of the magic of it. Because we didn't know what we were doing, we started questioning everything. Like, why is this done a certain way? Why should we continue doing that? Should we do something different? And we had nobody to tell us no. And so we just started doing things different in an industry. And as a result of that, we've seen tremendous improvement and growth, which we can get into in a little bit. But that's sort of my origin story.
Yeah. So you started out with single family doing traditional real estate, how most of us get into it. And then you saw a way to make something bigger and better, right? Let's talk about, so a lot of the conversations we have, when somebody's brand new in the estate space, it's what do I do first? Do I send letters? Do I buy leads? And it's like, well, first you should be empathetic to the prospect that you're trying to connect with. Be empathetic to their needs. Like, what are they going through? Do you understand what it feels like to lose somebody and then have this put on your shoulders? And you're one of the few people who approach multifamily real estate with that seeming to be in the front of your mind. Like, what is the problem? Multifamily is what we always hear. What you very rarely hear is, what is multifamily the actual solution to? And that's what really struck me about your model and then your values and business. Like, you first saw multifamily as a solution, then you went and looked at the problem, and then found a way to apply a creative thinking and business savvy to actually make yourself a blue ocean where you can compete in affordable housing at a high level of fit and finish, because you've been able to achieve operational efficiencies that others haven't. And that's such a cool thing. Like, that's like, I'm sure you know, but you probably downplay it. Like, it's damn impressive that you can compete with hedge funds and institutional buyers that are willing to take a 3 or 4 cap and just assume that rents will always go up. You can compete with those folks at a much lower, not saying you're at small scale, but at a much smaller scale, and actually achieve making affordable multifamily housing a part of this local solution. So talk about that. And like, what was that moment where you saw multifamily, the opportunity, differently than a hedge fund manager or than a big REIT?
Yeah. So at a high level, we design, build, and rent apartments, and we're really focused on driving down the cost of housing. But to do that, you have to drive down the cost of construction, which is a big, big challenge. And you kind of mentioned, like, people talk a lot about apartments as a way to make a lot of money. To me, that almost drives me nuts. Like, you are right. We have to know what problem we're solving. For us, the worldwide problem, I think we can have a meaningful impact, is the cost of housing. Imagine someday if your rent was half or your mortgage payment was half. I think that's the kind of societal impact we can make. And for me, I don't wake up thinking about, I could almost care less about the money. It really, sincerely, this is just a tool. I care much more about the impact on the world that we can make together. And so we started working on this, how to lower costs. And my dad was always a very scrappy, and I think as a small person, that makes a lot of sense. He would build just an 8-unit building, and it was me, my brother, my mom. We all went out for a family outing where we go to the local hardware store, which was a 30-minute drive, load up on all these carts, fill them to the brim. And my dad had this little trailer behind his little car. We fill that up really high and rope it off, and driving down the highway was a little, I don't know, sketchy, but we made it work. And it was that sort of energy that helped us maintain low costs back then. Obviously, that doesn't work at scale. And now at a higher scale, we look at the problem much differently, but it's still with that heart of, like, how do we solve lowering the cost of construction? We found a number of techniques to make that happen.
Yeah. And there's two things. I mean, what's really brilliant about the model is, one, you can bring housing to, like, quality housing to market at a more affordable price. But two, you're also insulating yourself against the confirmation bias that, to me, seems really apparent in the multifamily space of rents always go up. When we've got more than 1 in 3 Americans spending over 30% of their income on just housing, just the rent. And they're being pushed further and further away from the cities, while the cost of cars, the cost of gas, the cost of keeping a car maintained increases, and their wages aren't increasing nearly as quickly. So it's like understanding the root of this, like why this is so important. Like, rents are likely to come down. We see a 4-month trend right now at the time of recording. Rents have dropped for 4 consecutive months. So all the rents always go up underwriters they're starting to sweat right now. And that sets in. You guys, your model's already insulated against that. So you're truly bringing a solution to affordable housing. You're not going to be you know, you're not going to have margin calls on your portfolio and like banks, trying to it's just, you're not going to have the panic. So you have this calm, warm blue ocean that you're swimming in, and everybody else is about to just be panicked and fighting for everything they've built. Not everybody, a large number of people on one end of that spectrum. And I think that's really genius.
Yeah. And I think many investors in the multifamily space are very, I don't know, short-sighted. They looked at the last few decades, and yes, there's been a lot of profit and things you can earn in that. But honestly, I don't know when it's going to happen, but at some point, the whole space is going to change. Because you look at places like Japan, Japan's real estate does not appreciate in value. It's a lot like a car. It depreciates in value over time, right? And so that's fundamentally because of demographic changes that have been happening. And that's coming to the United States. I see issues in France right now that they're dealing with in that space. Maybe that's a decade, maybe that's two decades, maybe that's five, but at some point that's going to hit us. And so the bigger, wider societal issue besides just housing is as people age out and become older, we have less young people paying for the retirement of the older people. Well, unless we find a way to make everything that we have more productive and cost less, we're going to be in a world of hurt eventually. So not only are we trying to solve housing, but I'm really thinking long-term in like 4 or 5 decades, can we solve a part of the economy in such a way that actually can mitigate some of the demographic changes that are happening here in the United States?
That's
the kind of worldwide impact we're hoping to have.
No, that's awesome. And that is a long, dark rabbit hole. I mean, demographically, the United States, as most developed countries, if you haven't looked, go look at when birth rates peaked in the top 10 countries in the world, and then extrapolate that out. Like, look, what do you think that means as demographics shift within those countries, as they hold firm on immigration policies, as birth rates continue to decline? And what we saw was birth rates peaked in 1990. Then they kind of ramped up a little bit in the United States. And then in 07, they plummeted. Like, during financial hardship, people tend to not have babies because they move in with parents, they move in with roommates, and it's not time to start the family. And I think that's what we're likely going to see here is our population decline may get worse in the coming years because of, I would place blame on modern monetary policy. But it's the depth of your vision is really interesting to me. I think you're right. I think that for people who are short-sighted that are just part of the daily news cycle, they've probably already stopped watching this. For those of you that think deeper and you see real estate on a human level, your nose is probably against the screen right now. Like, this is the stuff that nobody's really talking about. And what's really great about Mike is he recognized it and realized it, he's actually steering his ship in that direction. He's taken a hell of a chance to make the world a better place. And I think that's awesome. There's so few developers in any vertical that are thinking that way. And what you're going to see with weather patterns changing, that will push people around on a map, demographics, and just the, you know, with the baby boomers we have between now and 2061, we'll statistically lose most of them. And you have about $142 trillion in generational wealth that will transfer from one generation to the other. Well, if mom and dad loved Florida, but now Florida, you can't get insurance on a house and all that, like, that you create a vacuum, where does that go? Mm-hmm. So the other thing that I think is genius about your model is you're geographically dispersed, but not based on current news, not based on what BlackRock is doing or another hedge fund. Like, you're thinking for yourself. You're not subject to, you know, well, everyone said this market is great, I'm going to go there. And I think that will really put the wind will be to your back for that reason too. Now all this could change. Maybe we could have radical immigration reform and we could allow immigrants into the country and bring manufacturing back as part of the deglobalization. But then again, you have to have affordable housing to do that. So I still think you're insulated against that too. So before we get too far down that back on track, like the human side of this, guys, like, I wanted you to, you know, meet someone who obviously has created a blue ocean based on benevolence, but also it's one of the first opportunities I've had to a pitch an opportunity to you, whether you're accredited or not. So let's talk about where you're going from here, Mike. Like what your big vision is, and how, if this is a conversation that's attractive to them, like how can they be a part of that?
Yeah, at a high level, our long-term goals are to reach 192,000 units in the next 10 years. And we're about 1,000 or so units today. We are building at a rate that's about 500 units a year. That rate has generally been doubling in size every year.
If I can interject, where did 192,000, like what got you to that figure?
We put together a goal about 10 years ago that had us reaching 192,000 over, it was 45 years, I think, at that time. And there came a point in our business, and we were right on track with that year after year after year, right? So we were in a good spot. But it came a point in our business where I learned a really important lesson about hiring the very best people. When I say the best people, I mean world-class. We fly people in from different states to come work here every single week and fly them home to work because they're best in the world at what they do. And once we did that, it started opening doors. We realized that some of the problems that we had before were solvable with great people. And then we asked and we turned around at each other like, okay, given what we're seeing now, what do we think we can actually hit? And we realized, at least at the time, it wasn't financial. The financials weren't the problem for us. It was the rate at which we can hire, find, and build the right group and the right people. And so then we put together a new goal that had us hitting 100 and that amount in the next basically 10 years.
That's amazing. Okay. Yeah. Sorry. It's an unusual, not like, yeah, I would expect 100 or 200, but you're very precise in that. So I figured I had to do with your current run rate.
Yeah. Well, we take it seriously. It's been interesting because we've been building all these systems to do construction differently. If you look at this industry over the past 60 years, manufacturing has improved productivity by 760%. Agriculture has improved it by 1500%. Do you have a guess of what construction has done over the past 60 years?
And is it like across, I don't even know that we've doubled in efficiency.
10%.
Yeah.
Over 60 years. Terrible. And in fact, the last few decades, it's actually gone backwards a little bit. We had a bigger spike earlier in the that period. But I talk to people so often because we have so many people coming in to work with us. This industry is so broken in so many ways, down to the kind of culture because it's rough and tumble, down to the way we think about things. For example, most of construction is done in a way that you have a different plumber, a different HVAC, a different electrician, all these different components. The general contractor is different. The owner, the developer, it could be different. Very disparate organization that creates headaches and problems. If you look at manufacturing, because we have a relationship with Toyota, they don't do that. You don't have a separate company installing the windshield from the guy installing the tires. And if construction was doing that, the tire guy would come in and be like, dude, sorry, I'm late this week. I won't be able to get there till next week. And then they would show up next week after the plant was shut down for an entire week. And then be like, what? I only get to work on one car at a time? That's insane. I need a whole floor of cars for me to work. Otherwise, I'm out of here. It's unreasonable. And the way Toyota does things is they're able to produce a car every 55 seconds. Every 55 seconds, they have a new car coming off the line. For us, we brought all of this in-house. We started applying some of the same techniques that they do. And we're now producing an apartment unit every 5 hours. And we think we can get that down to 2 or even less hours. And just doing that alone takes a project that would have taken 15 months down to 9 months. But there's a lot of techniques like that that we're executing on to really achieve this lower construction cost. It's 100% doable, but this industry is very stuck in its ways. And we're just trying to change that.
That's amazing. So in our flagship course, Probate Mastery, anyone who's a CPE who's listening to this is like, oh, here he goes. But I talk about the power of vertical integration.
Mm.
Your offer becomes so much more valuable. When you're vertically integrated, you do a lot less work because you have the best of the best around you. You go find the best solutions provider for each individual very unique problem. And then you delegate that off to them. And it, in our world of, you know, single family real estate, helping people who are in trust or probate administration, usually the repayment comes back into you in the form of referrals, which in essence makes your business more efficient. It's less marketing, less prospecting. People are bringing back to you. But I think regardless, even as different as your vertical is to mine, the same principles apply. Like if you focus on, if you have a purposeful outcome and you use vertical integration to have the, get the highest quality work with the highest level of delegation, then that frees you up to do what? To innovate, to think, to be out front, building relationships with Toyota so you can get better, like you can innovate. And I thought it was interesting. Toyota, you know, they understood they had to onshore manufacturing for the U.S. market because of import-export challenges. That in itself was brilliant. They were, you know, one of the first in the space. But I think the power of their manufacturing really, really shined through in the last 2 years. You notice they didn't have a chip shortage. They didn't have cars sitting around on lots. They didn't fill Kentucky with pickups. They were taking them to dealerships, and it's because they understand manufacturing, I think, better than almost anyone in the country, or excuse me, in the global automotive economy. And, you know, they have their own relationships. They're vertically integrated, and they were able to deliver vehicles when, you know, some of the oldest manufacturers in the world couldn't and still haven't. Yeah, it's a very, very different world that you're living in than what I think probably most people in this audience are. But what I'm excited about is how, you know, the bridge for these people that people like you can create. Like when you align with people who see the world in a different way, who do the impossible, like we call them driven. Which if you haven't read that book, Mike, I finally finished it. I met the author the other day in a Genius Network event. The book is called Driven. Awesome. You need to read it. It's about you.
I will.
You'll love it. Like it's really, it helps us understand ourselves, but like it's, you know, in a nutshell, you have a genetic sequence that is switched on from the hunter, like hunter gatherer, where after the agrarian revolution, most people that genome was switched and we live a comfortable lifestyle of stay here, protect what you have around you. And you don't have to be like looking at the horizon all the time, but in about 10% of the people in the world, genetically, you know, proven, there's a different sequence, like there's a different difference in the DNA. And about half of those people are dead or in prison because they had to find a way to focus that energy and take risks, but they did it in an unhealthy way. The other 5% are the people who are changing the world, the people who come up with blue oceans and really innovative ways of approaching challenging problems with really making it a pretty simple solution. But without that person staring at the horizon, like without that driven, and it's, I would bet that your dopamine receptor, you're driven by your D4 dopamine receptor. So it's an interesting read for anyone who would like to read more about it, to understand, you know, the people we call titans, or a lot of people like you are the unsung heroes, because you're not in it for the social reward. You're in it to see the solution. Like it's an agreement you made with your family, and that's probably as far as it goes, right? Yeah. You're probably not going to be the guy on stage, you know, with pyrotechnics blowing off, telling everybody to go buy multifamily real estate. You don't strike me as that kind of guy.
Yeah.
it's more about the purpose of it. So I want to put, so to back to that bridge, like for the people in this audience, if you're not passively investing, if you don't want to go develop multifamily complexes and compete in an extremely competitive space and be a world-class vertically integrated developer, that's okay. I understand. I don't either. That's why I like to connect with people like Mike, because you can take generations of expertise that have been focused in his family and what he's learned, and then those relationships with major manufacturers in a completely different vertical, but he's bringing those innovative techniques into multifamily so he can compete and outcompete almost anyone. What do you think that translates to? a return, like a higher return on investment. So he can also extend that. I think, you know, this is early in your period. So far you guys have built, you haven't raised capital. You've built with your own money, right?
That's correct. Yeah.
But you are getting to a point where it's like, okay, we can scale faster. We can make a bigger impact if we allow other people to be part of. So most of the people, the guests that we have on, you know, they're offering opportunities, but only for accredited investors. And I want to talk about the two differences for anyone who might understand, Mike, in your vision for this. How do you see people who might not be accredited, but they want to invest, let's say $5,000, $10,000. And then there's other people who are accredited and they're like, I've been looking for the right partner. I just need to place $1 million. And that's part of my thesis that's unfilled. Like, what's nice is you're appealing to both and you're allowing both sets of people to be part of a solution, but also to earn a return. And one of the really unique things is the liquidity that you're offering. That's something I've only seen from a couple of sponsors who are thinking very similar to you, like very, very innovative thinkers. It's not easy to find. So let's start with your vision for what it looks like bringing in investors for the first time and what you see as the impact to them, in addition to being part of the impact you're making in communities.
Yeah, we're in the process right now of launching our No Heart Invest platform. And there'll be a variety of different kinds of ways to invest to that platform. But the first one is going to be relatively simple. It's just an account you can put money into and take money out at any time, or you can put money in and lock it up for a certain period of time. Maybe that's 6 months, 12 months, 24 months. What's neat about it is that it offers or will offer a high rate of return, much higher than you can receive at a traditional bank account, but it gives you a lot of the same kind of flexibility that a bank account will. Now, be very clear, we're not a bank. We're not FDIC insured. Please read through the documents. But one thing that was really important to us was to make this available to anyone and everyone. So we're going the more expensive, painful, long route of getting our Reg A approval through the
SEC. No doubt about that.
Yeah, which enables anyone in the United States to invest in this. If you're not accredited, you're limited to 10% of your net assets or income, which, by the way, I'd recommend to do anyway. So that's a good recommendation. But when I look at this, when we looked at how we're using banks today, we actually asked ourselves the question, can we replace the bank? When we originally went down this route, we looked at becoming a bank ourselves. Turned out that was a possibility, with the exception we can't invest all the money in ourselves. Reasonable regulation prevented us from going down that route. But what we're doing is we're trying to essentially to eliminate the bank and allow you, the investor, to be the bank. And on top of that, you get then the bank's income, right? So I'm eliminating the bank, giving you the power of being the bank, and now you get the income that the bank would have gotten on you if you just invested in a bank account. So that really is a good product for non-accredited investors. It's also a good product for accredited investors who want to stick the money temporarily and move it to something else later down the road. Eventually, we'll be launching some more opportunities that might be more appealing to like lifelong accredited investors. But yeah, if you're interested at all, you can visit our website and there's a place you can put your email or get in contact with me and we can be in touch with those opportunities.
I'm really curious if you intend on offering participation to your tenants, like to the people who live in all of the units that you've already developed. Like, have you extended an offer to them to be part of the story and the expansion?
They will get an offer. So anyone can do this, including our tenants. We've actually thought deeply. We don't necessarily have a good solution to this yet. But the one thing I never have liked about apartments is you're not gaining equity as a renter. And so like, can we solve that problem so that living in an apartment is not only a good place to live, but you're gaining some of the advantage you would have gotten in a home. And so I think there's some creative solutions that might be coming down the pike through the No Heart Invest platform, not initially, but that once we have the platform established, we can start providing all these interesting opportunities.
Yeah, I can see where taking a percentage of rent and essentially booking that on a capital account for per tenant, that where they're actually, it's kind of like a leaseable co-op, I guess, is what it looks like in my head. where they have a capital account, and that it incentivizes them to stay longer because they're building, you know, X percent of that rent goes toward a capital account that actually yields a return. And you could yield that could come through your back through your books tax-free to them. It's a tax-free rent credit. So I can see where you could make that really attractive, and that might help you scale extremely quickly, because that's like a grassroots social campaign, right? Who's not going to talk about that? When a friend is talking about moving, well, you got to come to my neighborhood. We actually get rent back tax-free. Like it's talk about a competitive edge as a multifamily operator.
Yeah, I love that. So yeah, we're definitely having those kinds of conversations.
Cool. Well, mainly I just wanted to show you off. Like I think what you're doing is fascinating. I think that like it's you're one of those rare people that I'm like, the hell with it. Let's just have a conversation, because what you're doing, it's so different. Like it's rare that you see a blue ocean within it, such a competitive vertical like multifamily that has been for the most part dehumanized and commoditized. Yes. Over the last decade, especially over the last 15 years, like it's just become, it's not even about people or housing anymore. It's about finance and banks and hedge funds and investing and returns and all this. And our first conversation was striking to me. And I think that I wanted to show you as an example of potential to everyone in this audience, like where you are today in your current real estate business. You know, for you listening, understand how rare you are. If you sit around and listen to me talk about benevolence and empathy and compassion and actually doing what's in the consumer's best interest first, you're a different kind of person. And what's really beautiful is it seems the frame that I see the world through, the people who think that way, they don't always have the big flashy things early, but they usually always win the races. They do the best in the long haul. They have the most relaxed lives and the most enriched lives. So given an opportunity, if I find someone who's taken that to an extreme end of the spectrum, like an extreme in a good way, I'm damn well going to have them on the show so you can meet them. So I'm really curious if you guys, wherever you're watching or listening to this, engage with us. Let Mike know like what it means to you to hear like that you can come from just a single family real estate practice and to thinking differently and moving up to the point where you have a vision of not 192 units in the next decade, like a lot of people are thinking, but 192,000 units, and saying, yeah, we're probably going to finish early just because of what we're learning along the way. So that's why I wanted you guys to be here. You can find Mike. Mike, tell them what the best way to connect with you if they're inspired and want to learn more and maybe look at some of your opportunities.
Yeah, you can visit our website. It's norhart.com. That's norhart.com. Kind of another fun thing that we're doing is the Becoming a Unicorn podcast. And so we haven't launched it yet, but the idea of the podcast is looking at companies that have started off very small and become billion-dollar enterprises. So a couple of fun things to see on our website.
Do you have a connection with the Honda family?
I don't. Do you?
I don't. I wish I did. They're one of those amazing stories of like, you know, little family-run motorcycle company to Honda, like in multiple verticals. So if you can find somebody from the Honda Corporation, it would be really cool I'd like to hear you have that conversation with them, because having looked at real estate as manufacturing, I think it would be a fascinating conversation.
Yeah, that would be great.
But all right. Well, listen, thanks so much for sharing your time with our community. If you're welcome back anytime, I think you're a great example of somebody who's doing business and the absolute best way. And you couldn't have a bigger champion than you do in me. I can't wait to watch you grow and to reach your goals. What'll be fun is watching this 10 years from now, laughing at both of our studios. Like, what were we thinking? It's like Nintendo, but doing this in 10 years and laughing at how little you thought you would accomplish. I think with people like you, that's the most likely outcome is, you'll surprise yourself to the upside in a big, big way. And I think we're at one of those points, like history leaves clues, and I really enjoy, you know, Ray Dalio's work. I really enjoy, there's, you know, Peter Zion has done a really great job looking at this as a macroeconomic, you know, with macroeconomics. And I think with what's happening with the rise and fall of nations is another good, really good book that's been front of mind for me. I think we're at a pivotal point, probably one so not so dissimilar from our great grandparents. And it's really interesting, like you read about, you know, these titans of industry that rose out of those tumultuous times. I think there's big opportunities, but this time I think it's a little different. There's a lot more social accountability in the world. The world is a lot more decentralized, even though we're more connected. We're a lot less centralized, and there's a lot of social accountability that comes with that. So I think it's time for the benevolent boys to really rise as the next set of titans and take us into a new world economy. And I'd say you're running in that pack. So it'll be really interesting to see like what this conversation becomes in a decade. But thanks for lending your time today. Guys, go to norhart.com, check out what they're doing. And you're welcome back anytime, Mike, if you want to check in. Hopefully you hear from folks in our community. We're not pitching investments, but if you're not passively investing, what a great opportunity to be the bank for somebody who's doing things the right way. So thanks a lot, and we'll see you guys on the next episode.